Welcome to A Path Home. This is the podcast where we demystify the tasks related to after-death care through hearing stories from people who have cared for their own deceased loved ones at home. I'm your host, Sarah Cruz. I'm the director of Heartland Prairie Cemetery, a home funeral guide, death educator, and a member of the National Home Funeral Alliance. Welcome to Season 5 of A Path Home. I want to express my sincere gratitude to all of you who have listened and shared the podcast with your friends and family. Since I started the podcast in 2019, I've posted 68 episodes, and we're currently approaching close to 30,000 downloads, which I find absolutely incredible. I especially want to thank, from my deepest heart, the people who have reached out to me and agreed to share your personal stories. Each one of you are helping to change our culture's approach to death by giving voice to your experience for the benefit of others who haven't had to walk that tender path yet. I continue to be profoundly moved by the honesty, the emotion, the courage, and creativity conveyed in these stories. I learn something new every time. Earlier this summer, three brothers in the Weaver family, Zach, Kevin, and Sky, along with Sky's partner, Aaliyah, came over to my house. We all sat around my kitchen table, and they shared how they brought their dad, Phil, back to his home here in Salina after he died in a hospital in Wichita, and prepared him for a natural burial at Heartland Prairie Cemetery. Kevin, Sky, and Aaliyah make music together under the name The Gravy Ladles. I'll share some links in the show notes for your viewing and listening pleasure. At the end of this episode, you'll hear a song they performed at Phil's memorial service. Sky provided me with a solo recording he made of the song, called Ceiling to the Floor by Sierra Hull. All right, well, I guess I'd like to start with each of you introducing yourselves.
So I'm Kevin, Kevin River Weaver. I was Phil Weaver's fourth son.
And you're a twin.
He raised me. Yep. Identical twin.
How many boys in the family?
There's five.
So it was, our dad was married once to a lovely lady that we today call TJ Dubs. And they had a couple of beautiful boys, and they're awesome humans these days. And then our dad married our mom and had the three of us.
And can you just say your name? Twin number two.
I am twin number two, Joshua Sky Weaver. We got cool middle names.
And that was pretty much from our mom.
Yeah. So you go by Sky.
Yeah, that's right.
And you stuck with Kevin.
Yeah, you can call me, you know, really anything you want, but yeah, mostly. Mostly I go by Kevin.
And?
I'm Aaliyah Jasmine Fintz. I'm Sky's partner.
Nice. You have a nice middle name, too.
Thank you.
Fit right in a lot of ways.
My name's Zach Weaver. I am Phil Weaver's youngest son.
Okay. What's your middle name?
Fire.
Cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
How about you, Sarah?
Sarah Jeanette.
Okay. All right.
So I'd like to hear a little bit about your dad.
All right. I'll start with that one, too. So our dad, he was born in Oklahoma. He was born in Pryor, Oklahoma, and moved around a little bit. But anyway, he moved from Pryor to Pratt, Kansas, and, you know, that's where I think he did most of his growing up, in western Kansas. And then they moved to Salina, but also he joined the military pretty soon after high school.
And you guys were born here in Salina, right?
Yes, we were.
Yeah.
The three of us and our couple of half-brothers that we know and love.
So what was it like growing up with him?
You know, he was always there. He never really wasn't there. He was always, like, very physically present and, you know, showed up at all the events. Like, Sky and I got into playing music really early, and he was always very supportive of that and showing up at all the concerts and everything. And
as far as growing up with Dad, it was colorful, to say the least.
Good attitude.
He and I definitely had our differences growing up. I think that me becoming a dad really did something for our relationship. Becoming a grandfather to my children really did something for our relationship. We seemed to connect better once I was a father.
Yeah.
He always told me how proud he was of me in raising my kids, and it went from colorful to getting along better, I guess. I don't know what mm-hmm. words to use, but...
Mm-hmm.
The lighter spectrum of the colors.
Yeah, the lighter spectrum of the colors. Yeah, we definitely had our differences. And not to say that we didn't still have our differences, because it wasn't all sunshine and roses even after I had kids, but mm-hmm. it definitely did something for my relationship with my dad.
How many kids do you have?
Two. I have an 11-year-old and a 3-year-old, both girls.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't get to know much of Adeline, which is my youngest. Oldest is Marley. Dad was pretty sick when Addie was born. Well, let's see, he passed in February of 22 last year. Yeah.
Yep.
He was born in December of 19, so she wasn't... She didn't get to know much of him, and he didn't get to know much of her.
He was probably in the hospital for a pretty good amount.
In the hospital for a lot of her her lifespan.
Yeah.
He was in the hospital and
at home
struggling with alcoholism.
Yeah.
Right. He had a really good bond with Marley, and they liked to hang out together, but I didn't like for my 7, 8, 9-year-old daughter to be hanging out with drunk grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
yeah,
you don't want your daughter riding around in a car with somebody who's drunk.
No.
And that's something that was going to happen.
Yeah,
it did happen.
But I want to say that I can vouch for Dad, you know, and from a different perspective. Obviously, I'm not a father, but just in Dad's later years, you know, whatever was the cause of it, for better or for worse, he seemed to, like, soften up into kind of a sweet old man.
Yeah. At the end of his life, I mean, the last few years of him being around, I think that he really, I mean, yeah, sweet old man, but a lonely sweet old man.
Oh, and for sure.
He just wanted companionship so badly.
Yeah.
That he was in a relationship and then out of a relationship and then in another relationship and out of that one and moving people into the house. And
another thing that's strange for like a 7, 8, 9-year-old girl to be exposed to.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. You know, admittedly, I have the perspective that was furthest away. So, all
that's
that.
True.
But yeah, something happened and, Dad, like, got nicer in his old age.
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I was just talking about the fact that that really did something to our... I mean, I became father 11 years ago. He was still pretty healthy when Marley was born.
Mm-hmm. Right,
and that was, like, the beginning of us kind of
having
more better than worse as far as our relationship was, where it was more worse than better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now the three of you are in a band together, based out of Missoula, Montana.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you've got a great name, the Gravy Ladles. How did you come up with that?
Process of elimination.
These guys like to cook a lot, and they happened to be making gravy one night. And a song just came up in the kitchen. We're the groovy little gravy ladles. Like, that should be a band name. We'll add it to the list.
We had a long list by the time we sat down and tried to suss one out of our list. And groovy little gravy ladles got shortened. It was the winner.
Nice. Now you do songwriting?
Yeah, we definitely do songwriting. That's, you know,
what we really want to be doing. We definitely do covers as well and like to spice up our covers. And got home-cooked originals as well. And Sky and Aaliyah definitely do most of the writing.
Has this experience with your dad entered into any of your songs?
Yeah. I wrote a song called Morning Song that I do very much feel that it was influenced by my dad's death. It's Morning Song like the sun rising in the morning, not like morning grief type of morning. The chorus goes, lucky like the day is long. So it's like a song about that I'm grateful to be alive. And very much inspired by my dad's death.
Yeah. A significant time that I met you all was when your mom, Willow, asked if I would come to her house. She'd been trying to plan this for a while, get me to come over and when you guys were in town to be able to talk about her end of life plans, and she wanted to be buried at Heartland, and that was part of it. So we finally all were able to hit on a time when it was going to work after the pandemic had finally passed and you were both in town and Zach was here. Now, at that time, after, you know, having this whole conversation with your mom and letting you know what was possible and what her wishes were, you let me know that your dad was currently in the hospital. He was hospitalized here in Salina.
Among other hospitalizations, it was just like a time in his life where he was spending a lot of time at the hospital. And yeah, he was currently in the hospital, maybe even with COVID at that time.
Okay. Were you thinking at that time that he was nearing death, or were you just kind of like noting that maybe this conversation was going to be important in caring for your dad as much as it was that you were there for your mom at that point?
Gosh, I would say that, it feels like it might have been mom who was mostly responsible for kind of driving that conversation in, you know, not only her direction, but dad's direction as well. I don't really recall that it came so much from us feeling like, oh, we should make this conversation about dad too.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I mean, there was very much like a, you know, none of us were surprised, you know, at the hospitalizations and at the death when it did happen later. You know, we were all in a state of like, this is gonna happen sometime soon. But that being said, I wouldn't say that we, that like that led us to think, oh, we should use this meeting to prepare in this way. I think that was kind of mom who got the ball rolling in that direction.
I also think mom's knowledge of healing and, you know, life and death allowed her to be able to see that dad was dying, and she told us that, you know. So we were aware in that way. And, you know, it just makes sense that she was the one who drove the conversation that way, because I think she saw it the most clear that he was dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, you know, she might even had foresight in that what to do with his body might be a question mark. Because it was.
Right.
He didn't have any specific thing brought up.
In my memory, we were trying to explore the option of donating his body to science, but science didn't want his body because of COVID.
That's right.
Which didn't make sense to us, because we thought, like, you know, wouldn't this be something you would want to, you know?
We would think that he would be able to, like, make breakthrough discoveries by studying his body.
Yeah.
With alcoholism.
Yeah.
And COVID and just all this stuff going on.
Just all the stuff that his body went through and you know,
but they didn't want
living.
So yeah, that was what the plan was. You're right. Yep.
So it did end up that what to do with his body was a question mark.
Because, mm-hmm. Yeah, we all thought that was a good idea. You know, Dad made that happen, you know, like got all the ducks in a row for that. And we were all like, great idea, Dad.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But then it didn't work out.
Yeah, so he had a lot of things going on with him. He didn't die from COVID, per se.
That, but I would say another. That is absolutely accurate. And
it was a contributing factor, maybe?
On his death certificate, it's the leading cause.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. None of us really believe that COVID-19 was legitimately a cause of death, I would say.
But yeah, it was at the top of the list. And then there's COPD and emphysema. And then the one that made the list just before he died was kidney failure.
Mm.
So
stage one kidney failure.
So at this point, he had been moved down to a hospital in Wichita.
Right after he finished with his quarantine, which was, you know, twice as long as usual because of his conditions.
Mm.
There was this room available for him in a facility in Wichita that specialized in lung rehabilitation. So, you know, he jumped on it. And we all thought that was a good idea for him to jump on. I mean, it was unfortunate because it meant he was going to be in Wichita, not Salina. But
super unfortunate.
I mean, yeah. We were able to go visit him a couple times there in the facility in Wichita. So that was great. And that's where he ended up dying. So, you know, that's the way it went down.
Yeah. So you both were back in Missoula at that point?
When he died, we got the call. We were in Missoula when that happened.
Who called you?
Our mom. Zach was the one who got the call from the facility in Wichita. He was on the road driving his 18-wheeler and got stopped in his tracks. And then Mom called us and we made plans to get back down here. And here's where the story really starts.
Right, exactly.
So, our oldest brother, Pip.
Phil Jr.
Pip was a little bit, you know, at first not quite convinced about the green burial thing. Because aside from the donating his body to science, Dad talked about cremation. You know, when he would just talk about his death before he got close to it, it was always cremation. That was always what he said. You know, and I think at that point when he was talking about that before he got close to death, it was just kind of like that was what was cheaper of the traditional options, you mm-hmm. know, and that was why for him. But then when it came close to it, he was like, okay, what's even cheaper than that? And then donating his body to science was free, so that was where he went. And then even just before he died, we gave him information on green burials, and he was into it.
The last time that I saw Dad, when Kevin and I were in, because there were only going to be two people in the room at a time, we talked to Dad about what it was about, and he was like,
gave him some information.
Yeah, he was about it. I mean, we gave him your website, and he got some mm-hmm. literature, and he mm-hmm. was all about it.
Yeah.
Phil and Joe, the older brothers, of course, didn't get to see that.
Yeah.
Pip especially was like, Dad really wanted to be cremated. Is this what we...
And also just unsure really, what green
right,
was.
Right.
Totally.
Right.
Yeah.
And so then we kind of got the brother. I mean, we, you know, gave them some literature, you know.
So how did you, amongst yourselves, decide that you were really going to handle this yourselves and not use a funeral home and bring him back up here to Salina? And
gosh, you know, when we tell people, our friends, and, you know, when we tell people about the experience, the reaction is always something like, wow, that's so crazy. How did you do that? How did you go through with that? Mm-hmm. So I can understand why one would ask the question, you know, how did you decide? How did you land on that decision? But yeah, looking back, it seemed like it was a pretty easy decision to make.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I think our dad kind of being the kind of person he was and those decisions he made about how to do it, you know, just like kind of moving towards what made the most sense and, you know, in a lot of ways, a lot of factors, and, you know, finance definitely being one of them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think just keeping it all as simple and cheap as possible was definitely a part of it for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, simple.
And how did all that unfold at the hospital?
I mean, it must have been like the day or a couple days after Dad passed. Well, no, I guess it was a little after a couple days, because it was once everyone was local. And
once these mm-hmm. guys got back to town.
Right, and the other brother. I mean, once all five of us. So once all five of us were in Salina.
You know, at that point, he's in the morgue. So
right, at that point, we gotta make a decision. Right, right. They're not going to keep him in the morgue forever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Was it the morgue at the hospital?
It was.
Yeah.
Because I remember I got a call from a guy from there.
Yeah, security guard. Yeah.
Making sure that it was okay mm-hmm. to release his body to you guys.
Yeah.
Well, they called you to get the okay.
Well, When we showed up, Sarah said to
She's
me...
She's our legal advisor.
Right. When I called fantastic. And told her that we were doing the green burial thing, she said, if anything gets sketchy or weird or whatever, have them call me.
Yeah.
And
I love it.
So, yeah, I went inside and they were like, I don't know if we could just release this body to these five people.
Fine individuals. these guards, you know, among a lot of other people who, you know, were a part of this story or we just tell this story, you know, it's like something new to them.
Mm-hmm.
The first communication that we had with the hospital about picking up Dad and what we were doing was just me. The twins were still on their way here. So I guess maybe we decided before you guys actually made it to Salina that we like were doing the green burial.
I remember phone calls to Pip must
have
about
been,
that.
Yeah, it must have been a phone thing. Because it was just me in Wichita. I had to go pick up his belongings. You know, he had his phone. All of his stuff was at the hospital.
Yeah.
So I had to go pick up his belongings. Got to see that him, when, talk with him for a little while.
That was when
his kind of a cool alarm. Story. Yeah, we were... They had just rolled Dad out into the hallway. And they closed the doors to the hallway, roll him out, and then they opened up the doors and let me know that I could go in. So I opened the doors, and there is a security guard that was standing kind of by Dad's body. Mm-hmm. You know, he said, this is for you and your dad. I'm not here to invade your privacy. I just have to be here. We can't just leave you unattended with a body from the morgue. So he was standing over in the corner. And I had a plastic trash bag off to the side that had all of Dad's belongings in it. I just get in there, take the bag, set it off to the side, and I'm walking over to Dad, and I just start talking to him. I'm holding his hand, talking to him, and this phone starts ringing. And I thought that it was the security guard's phone. So I said, hey, man, you can take that call. Like, don't feel like you're going to be rude if you're talking on the phone while I'm back here. It's no problem. He said, that's not my phone. Oh, so then I go into Dad's property and I pull his phone out and there's an alarm going off that it's time to watch Jeopardy.
Oh my gosh.
Because he had an alarm every day in his phone that it was time for Jeopardy.
Wow.
And it just was crazy timing, you know, Dad and I were there just talking and...
Time for Jeopardy.
Yeah.
I always had a good sense of humor.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
We had already decided as the brothers that we were doing the green burial. So I just let the security know, you know, Dad's got five boys. I'm the only one that lives here. It was basically, I was just making sure it's okay for him to sit in the morgue until I've got the whole family here.
Everyone together.
I don't want to take, you know, he's going to, right, I can't take him home and keep him on ice for a week.
Right.
So
they can.
So I just wanted to make sure that it was okay for him to be there. They said, yeah, whenever, you know, whenever you guys get, you know, they're not going to keep him for a month, but they said, is everyone on the way? And I said, yeah, all the brothers are on the way. And that was when you got the call, because I was talking to the head of security and he was like freaked out by the whole thing. Like, I don't know that I can just release a body to this random guy that walked into my hospital. Like, I got to figure out from other people what's going on. Well, one of the security guards, there was two security guards in the office that I was in. And then the office was like the head of security's office. And one of the other security guards that was just a regular security guard, I guess his aunt was green buried. And so he had some background with that. He said, yeah, when my aunt passed, cousins, he said like it was a family affair. All the family went up, picked up her body. We left with the body. So he's like, I know that this can be done because I've been a part. Yeah. So it just happened to be that somebody was there.
That's so cool.
That knew a little bit.
That too.
Because I was like, well, that's cool that like some. So now I'm not this weirdo that this.
Right.
One of his guys knew a little bit of something about it.
They're very accustomed to releasing a body to a funeral director. Now you could have gone that direction. You could have had a funeral home take care of making all the arrangements for the green burial.
Sure.
They can do that. But you had also decided that you were going to take care of him yourselves.
Exactly.
Right,
because you knew that
we wanted him
possible.
To be home. Right,
yeah,
right.
You wanted to bring him back home.
Mm-hmm.
And as a part of the whole learning about the green burial process, we also learned about that. And, you know, we were talking about the whole decision to do the green burial. And that was just like a little bit hesitant on that decision.
Mm-hmm.
However, the decision to do all this ourselves, zero hesitancy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were all like, oh yeah, of course.
It's
you know?
It's really very like cool. It's really the way that it should be done.
So just another thing about that, our dad, as we've said, in the last 3 to 5 years of his life, he was very sick. In that time, he spent a lot of time in the hospital, more and more towards the end. And another thing he was doing in that time was he was spending his money, some of his money and his energy, fixing up the house that we did our growing up in. When he first bought that house, I remember he wasn't like in love with it, but by the time he came closer to the end of his life and did more work with it himself, and it was a lot of stuff that like he, you know, came to really love that house and really miss it when he was in the hospital.
Yeah.
And he would tell us that. He tells us that a lot. And so that was another big part.
Yeah, to bring him back to this house
making
that
he put
so much into and loved.
Yeah.
So I remember telling you one of the ways to pick up a body is by rolling up the sheet on both sides, and someone told me that was really hard.
That was a really all five brothers had a difficult time getting his body.
I just gotta talk about that a little bit, and I'm sure you would touch on this too, but like, the VA installed a ramp for Dad. They did this while he was in the hospital in Wichita, and they did it. They got it. They did it for free. They got it done. And it was something he was like trying to work out, you know, in his last days, but he never even got to see it.
Yeah.
Because
he was supposed to get an electric scooter too. That was
one. That was another thing they were going to give him for
free.
And
this damn ramp was 10 feet long.
It was way longer than that, dude.
Yeah, it was. You're right. It was.
Yeah.
And it was tight. The handrails were tight. So that was what made it super difficult to bring it. It was a lot of what made it super difficult to bring his body actually into the house.
Yes, but Dad's house is an old home. And the back entryway, there is a screen door and then a hallway. So that's where the pantry is. And then the back door to the actual house. And we got him in the screen door. And that hallway, he had like put hooks along one wall. And then there was a deep freeze on the other wall. We couldn't get him through. We had to put him down and get the deep freeze out of that hallway and into the house just so that we could get his body through.
Oh, oh my gosh.
The deep freeze was full of like spoiled full meat. Of,
yeah.
Oh,
no. Freezer burn, like crazy freezer burn meat.
Right. Because we actually ended up using some of the freezer burned meat for his body.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
I love
totally.
That.
Yeah. Yep.
We had all the ice packs like you hit my desk, but
it was
like
pretty freezer burns.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. You just get creative, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're in your house.
Come on. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we had all the ice packs that you had lent us, and they're all on Dad. And we're like, once these thaw, what are we going to do? Like, we don't have extra. We can't freeze these. Well, so then we're like, we got this whole freezer full of junk meat. It's all frozen. There's our ice packs.
Rotated those in and out.
So you brought him up here in your own vehicle.
In a rented minivan.
In a rented minivan.
That's right.
Yep. I went to Enterprise.
Went to Enterprise. Entreprisoto. That one that you've all never heard of.
So, and then had him at home. And how long was he there before the burial?
Overnight.
Overnight.
Yep. Just one overnight.
We got everything together on a Sunday, built the burial board.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. Is another cool part of this story was that, so you had given me Bob Ash's contact information,
mm-hmm.
and I got raw wood from him. He dropped it off behind Dad's garage, and he has
the Didn't charge wood. Us for it.
No, and he had like a diagram of how to build a board, because he's built a bunch of them for...
For
people that are going, he said, I can build it or you guys can build it. We wanted to build it. So he dropped off the wood and the diagram of how to build it. And Dad's got all these tools in his garage that he would, oh my gosh, to know that his boys together built a board for him to be put in the ground, he would have been smiling ear to ear using his equipment.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, you gotta think that he was watching us do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we all talked about that while we were doing it. Like, Dad would just love that we're all using his tools in his garage, all of us doing this together. And so it was started out the three of us,
mm-hmm.
then Pip showed up a little bit later,
mm-hmm.
and then Joe kind of was like, I don't really care if I'm a part of it or not.
Mm.
And then he showed up and got there and he was like, all hands on. Yes, let's do this. And given directions, and it was just really cool how that all went together.
Beautiful hell of a team.
Yeah. And then we got it built. And one of the twins, I don't remember which one of them went first, but we're like, well, we need to see if a body will go on this. If a whole body.
Yeah, that's right.
So one of the twins laid down on it, and we picked up one of the twins.
We also
just
turns.
Yeah, so then all of us, because they were like, well, he was a heavy man, so let's get Zach on here, because he's a heavy man as well.
Uh-huh.
So all of us took turns getting picked up on the bodyboard, and it held up, so we figured, let's go get Dad.
Yeah.
We showed up at the hospital morgue at 11 o'clock at night to pick up a dead body. And that was after you had already talked. I mean, everything, I knew that at that point we just needed to go and get him, because I already had everything lined up. I already talked to head of security.
Mm-hmm.
I called before and let him know that it was going to be pretty late when we got there. He said the guy that was head of security wasn't going to be there when we got there, but he said, I'll leave a note on my desk that says that this has already been approved.
Correct.
We picked him up. He was in an opaque body bag,
mm-hmm.
so we couldn't see him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we got home at 1 a.m. or something like that. So,
late. So
we put him in the living room, put ice on him, and left him in the body bag that first night. And, you know, we woke up 4 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
And
Joe made the executive decision, because we were going to... uncover him when we got home. And Joe made the executive decision, let's, as brothers, get some sleep. Mm-hmm. And then we can open the bag, see him.
That's a big step.
Yeah, it really was.
Because
really
I, at the time, was the only one who had seen him.
Mm-hmm. But so anyway, together in the morning,
unzipped him, got him out of the bag, which was a chore in itself, because, you know, he's not helping.
Had to get him out of the bag. Had to get sheets under him.
Right, so Joe, we got the bag unzipped all the way, and Joe's trying to roll it underneath his body so we can get it down below his hips and then just slide it underneath his legs. Somebody can lift his legs and slide it, which we did get done, but it was a chore to get that done.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, you know, doesn't have any clothes on at this point, so
he's in the nude.
You know, we are like, we're going to the cemetery to bury him later today, so let's put clothes on him that we want to bury him in, and made that decision at that point.
So we put shorts on him.
The shorts Sky, that he always wore.
Sky, Kevin, and Joe, you know, again, got shorts up to pretty much his buttocks, and then rolled one way and picked that side up, and then rolled the other way and picked that side up, got him up to waist level, and then whole nother story, boy, what a dumb shirt is what he was buried in, which is a whole story in itself. But so we got the shirt out, and all of the brothers are like, how are we going to do this shirt? And I said, we're going to cut the back of it all the way up, and then all you gotta do is slide his arms in it, and then it looks like he's wearing the shirt.
Right,
you just tuck it under him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
let's not try to put the whole thing on him.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, so that was what we did. Just cut the back and slid it over top of him and tucked the sides in, and then Kevin wanted to shave him because he was real scraggly and not looking like. I mean, go ahead. You were the one that did that.
That was another thing that he was talking about a lot just before he died, because he had such little energy, and like I said, he was, you know, spending a lot of his energy doing other things, like learning about how he wanted his body to be disposed of.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, he just said a lot that, oh man, I feel so scraggly, and you know, he was always at least better than that at shaving, so.
Yeah, we as kids had never seen him, his face looking like that.
Yeah.
Looking all unkept like that.
So he was very clean shaven.
That's right.
Yeah, not clean shaven. He always had a goatee.
A little goatee.
Yeah.
But we just trimmed him. He was real long and wiry.
Oh, yeah. Just like covering his top lip.
Yeah.
And so trimmed it
we
up.
Just made it look like he would have had.
Well, Kevin did.
Right,
Kevin
yeah. I guess that. I can't say
there
me
was,
at all. That
was there
all
was,
Kevin.
Like, fluid seeping out all through all that process. Kevin really made that happen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Before we move to the cemetery, I'm just wondering how all that felt. Was there ever a moment where you were just like, oh my gosh, we're in over our heads? Or were you just, like, going along with what your hearts were telling you to do, and it just was getting it done?
I think that it was absolutely, I mean, I can't speak for all of us, but I think that it was absolutely just, this is
going
what we're doing.
Emotions.
Right.
Yeah.
And we had each other. I mean, we had a great support system.
Really,
we had
really
all
did,
the brothers
yeah.
and, you know, mom and TJ Dubs. And
I think that we all kind of, you know, in that support system, we all kind of took our turns breaking down a little bit and allowed each other, you know, to do
incredibly
that.
Overwhelming.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Was,
I'm not going to say that it wasn't that.
But we got it done.
Yeah.
And that was a whole part of it, you know, allowing the breakdowns to happen and then, you know, getting back up and making the next step.
Yeah.
So you brought him out to the cemetery. I remember that being a very emotional and powerful experience.
It really was, yeah. It really was.
Yeah.
From, you know, we parked the van, like, as close You know, we didn't drive it on the prairie, but we parked it close to the path, and even Mike helped us.
Once we were lowering him, Mike helped.
Yeah.
Like getting him over there was just, the five boys.
Yep.
You're right.
Yeah, and honestly, right. Kind of a procession.
Just a side note, we didn't use the burial board. Bringing him into the house, it was so much easier. We should have done that.
We should have. You're absolutely right.
Oh, but he was...
Was it made yet?
The burial board wouldn't have fit through the... That's why we didn't use it, because the burial board didn't fit through the railings on the...
Totally.
So then he was wrapped in a sheet as well on the burial board. Once you got him dressed and wrapped him in his shroud.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I do remember that the sun was starting to set... Because this was in February.
Oh, yeah.
So it was early. It gets dark early. And y'all started closing the grave. You know, I had the shovels out there. And, you were determined to finish it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The sun was gone. Matter. We were still there.
Yeah, we were still there.
We put dirt on it.
Dirt, yeah.
Yeah.
Singing songs while we were covering it.
Yeah, I appreciated that of Mike. Mike Madison to sing those songs. I thought that was really nice.
It was.
He led those songs and we all sang together at that point.
Yeah. That was cool.
It was "All Fly Away." There's a couple really nice songs.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So I guess to wrap things up, I wonder if there's anything that, you know, in hindsight, you kind of wish you did differently. Or what you might recommend to people who are thinking about doing this sort of thing. If there's kind of a little piece of wisdom, something that you learn that you might be able to pass on to someone else.
I just think if you do decide to do this, even if you kind of feel pretty good about it at first, I feel like the same thing that happened to us is going to happen to pretty much anyone who does this. By the time you're done with it, you're going to feel like an expert.
Yeah.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, I mean, we have all said that when Mom goes,
it's
going to be a breeze.
Comparatively, I think that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like the five of us had moments that we would never, like, all five of us singing Billy Joel for the longest time. I feel like that's another part of Dad's death that, like, the five brothers got to experience that kind of a bonding that we wouldn't have ever done. I mean, you know, deaths happen, but that was cool to experience that kind of a bond with my four brothers.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, that was the one that really sticks out, singing all together in my living room a song for Dad.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah.
It's a good memory.
And then I guess just one more thing I'd like to say is I'm 35 and I'm pretty sure this is where I want to be buried as well.
Yeah. I'm 32 and I know that that's where I want to be buried. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like a good plan.
It's a good plan. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, four more.
Mom and the three boys.
Yeah, keep some room open.
I will. There's plenty of room out there.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you so much for sharing the whole story. I've been wanting to talk with you about this for
us too.
A while, and I'm really glad that we were able to work this out. You guys were in town for a gig, and
especially in person like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah. It is.
You too, Aaliyah. You didn't really get a word in edgewise, but...
It's okay.
Your presence is felt.
I just want to say the whole process was just amazing to witness and just an amazing, powerful, beautiful experience. I've had a lot of family and friends die throughout my life, but never experienced anything as powerful and real as this process. And just seeing the five brothers working so well together. I never seen anything like that too. So it was just amazing and an honor to be a part of it all.
Yeah, what a gift.
Uh-uh.
I'm a little scared of heights. I've been that way all my life. My daddy held me to the ceiling, and I can still recall the feeling of holding on too tight. And then he laughed at me and say, well, baby, you don't have to feel that way. I've got my feet here on the ground. Go on and just reach up there now. It's really not that far from the ceiling to the floor. Now on this early morning flight from up here in the sky, maybe I'm finally letting go from the 22nd row, 30,000 feet below the ceiling to the floor. And if I'm falling down, yes, if I'm falling down, just go on and let me fall. No, it's not that far, the ceiling to the floor.
The ceiling to the floor. Whoa.
A Path Home is a production of the National Home Funeral Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating and advocating for communities and families who choose to care for their own loved ones at death. Check out our website at homefuneralalliance.org. If you like this podcast, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. If you would like to share your home funeral or natural burial experience on the podcast, please email me at podcast@homefuneralalliance.org. We'd love to hear from you. The music at the beginning and end of A Path Home is written and performed by Sarah Cruz. Our beautiful cover art is by Linda Curray. And until next time, remember the words of Ram Dass. We are all walking each other home.
I want to be there to walk you home. I'll tend to your body, you'll tend to my soul. And if it happens,